Accession number 13559, reel 2.
Colonel Bjørnsholt, reel 2.
Yes, I would say that up to a capitulation in 45, the force in the whole of Copenhagen consists of about 10 to 12,000 people. Civilian and military, most of them are very well trained in underground activities. Then we had already in 44, two sabotage organizations also controlled by the Freedom Council in Copenhagen. It was one communist guided BOPA, B-O-P-A, BOPA, and one more liberal called H.D. Holger Danske. It's after a name after an old myth in Kronborg, Holger Danske. And I took over the H.D. after they were more or less completely destroyed by Gestapo. There was the remaining part I took over in 44, and their leader was my second in command later on in 44. I would say when we come to 44, that was the most active period for my area. And if you want to so the problem was, of course, to live underground for all these people, to get security always. So you have to move all the time around. You have to get money, you have to get a ration card, and the poor widows, also the lonely wives for the men who were underground, you have to take care of them. Money and ration and all that, but it was very well organized. We had no money problem. We got all the money we wanted from the National Bank.
How?
Yes, they had a delivering system. So, in fact, one of the good former minister, he came out and he gave to one of my commanders, and so in fact, I had probably 10,000 crowns someday to use for buying some machine guns, or if I want to, I could have 10,000 or 20,000. It was not a problem. The problem was to get them to the right places for a poor, starving family, a wife, and three kids, and to know that she needed the money. Some were very, very proud and wouldn't have it. And the ration card we stole in the national register, what do you call it, the public register, all the people living in a certain town. They also had responsibility for delivering ration cards. So we got all of you needed, and that was not a problem. But security, of course, and we had a lot of system for knowing when the Gestapo came or not came.
What kind of systems?
Oh, you know, all these with curtains or certain flowers in the window, or a pin on the door, and all that. And we have a telephone communication system, so you have a certain contact telephone. So if I call the telephone on a certain exact time, I say, okay, I want to speak to Alfred and Otto. It's 10 o'clock at so-and-so. Then he later on, they all called later on and knew that I want to speak to them. And the time was, of course, fixed. It's plus or minus 1 hour. At the time, told them, and the place, of course, was a certain place, and you had to be exactly on the time. If you were just 5 minutes late, I just walked, no meeting. It was required to be exactly on the time, due time, all the time. And you had to change the places from day to day. And you have a system for that. It functioned very well. And the contact telephone, that was a very risky job. And it happens once that it was a priest he was taken by Germans. But he warned us, and he was a clever man. So when I called, he said, "Well, would you like to come out here and meet so-and-so?" I said, "Yes, I would like to also." He knew that I understand immediately that he was under pressure. So it functioned very well. My old aunt had a contact telephone, and she enjoyed it until she was scarce. She was an elderly lady. My sister had one, and so. But after a certain time, you change the number and the person. But that, I guess, was the most important system. Then I had, of course, the same system up to my commanding officer in Copenhagen. So then, of course, you also have a problem with carrying guns. Normally, you have no guns on you on account of it's too difficult to escape or to hide that you have something. And you have false papers, false legitimation and all that false. And you have a story, but you'll never be able to keep it up when you're under pressure. So,
what was your cover story?
Well, I had so many. I was normally in the assurance banks. Then you can have a briefcase with some papers in. And you can walk around also to try to get people to sign assurance. And my names change all the time. I have many names. The last name, the most known name as a call name was Stolpe. And it's on this close. My wife made this. If you've seen Mr. Simples, the green light and so on. That's all the names and symbols are from occupation time.
Who was the man that you reported to, that you were responsible to?
It was a colonel. He was lieutenant colonel upon that time. His name was Chimroth, Chimroth. He was later on taken by Germans in February 45. I come to that later on. But in 44, I tried to train my units, about these 1,500 men, train them in sabotage activities and to plan for destruction of all the communications that Germans had. You know, the telephone communication was very important for Germans. They have all the schools with troops, and they have, of course, the headquarters. And we knew exactly where all the lines, telephone lines, where they ended and where we could destroy them. Also, the cable to the foreign countries, we were able to destroy it. It was all planned very well. And I remember it was required for us to have a certain arrangement made in a certain district in the telephone house in middle of Copenhagen. It was a center for all communication, guided by Danes. So that was a normal head of all telephone communications in Copenhagen. And it was required for us to have them to cooperate with us when we made the plan for destruction. And in one of the districts, we had some suspicion that the leader of this certain district was on the other side, but we had no proof. And when the hard time seemed to belong, appeared to go up, in March 45, I guess, there we couldn't do anything as long as he was in head of this district. So I decided to get him killed immediately, and after that was done, we were able to continue to plan for the destruction of all communications. That was in March 45, and we got the first information that the time was coming that something could happen. Well, I go back to 44, but the communication system was very, very important object for us. Then, of course, there were certain other destruction of certain passages in Copenhagen, some bridges, and to try to contain the German troops. We believed in our own strength, so we were able to keep the Germans in certain areas and I hope for some Allied forces to come. I could say as a headline for all these activities, it was that our aim was to get the Allied to recognize us in Denmark as Allied and not as German, German-friendly. It was very important, and our politicians had done what they could to do the opposite. So the underground had the problem. We must prove for the Allies that we are on their side and not on the German side. And therefore, there came a conflict between the politician and us. One of the biggest sabotages in Copenhagen was the destruction of the so-called rifle syndicates. It was a factory where they produced machine guns and other types of guns, ammunition, all that. Quite famous, and we had before the war export of weapon from them. And the Germans, of course, had occupied the factory, and they worked for the Germans and produced a lot of weapon. So I made an agreement with the BOPA, the Communist Sabotage Organization, to destroy the factory. And it was so that in one of my P groups, P4, there was a non-commissioned officer, and he was in charge of the guarding people at the factory. They believed him to be on their side. So he was in charge there. He was sitting in the guard room and controlled the guard. So on a certain time, he just took the guard and disarmed them, controlled them, and then we got in and placed the bombs, and the whole factory went up in the air. And it was very important to get so many weapons as possible. So I had some talks to carry weapons out, and the time was, of course, very short. I took not part myself in this action. I was forbidden. I was restricted. I was too important. I knew too much, so I had to be a little away from that. But nevertheless, we got a lot of weapons from there. I think I had listed.
Where was?
Yeah, about 18 machine guns and 12 machine guns, pistols, ammunition, and so on. And BOPA, of course, also got a lot of weapons.
Where was this factory?
Where it was in the northern harbor in Copenhagen. It's called. It exists also today. Industri Syndicate is the name today. The train is running just very close, so I used the train just to control the action. I came through. I could see it was okay. And then we had to get all the weapon out of Copenhagen for later distribution, and it was done. It was one of my best men who was my man on the action. He's still living, but most of the old people there have died. Also, and after this sabotage action, we got a compliment from London that it was very good that we had done so and so. I can say we also had a problem with these national registers where Gestapo tried to get information. You can trace a person through where he lived and where he's coming from and where he's moving to, family, relatives, and so on and so. So it has to be destroyed. And in Copenhagen, there are one big in not far from the town hall. And Frederiksberg has another one. And my colleagues in Frederiksberg area, one of my good friends from the school, and I make an agreement that we'll do sabotage both of those on a certain day and a certain time. It must be exactly the same time, on account of when the one was destroyed, I guess they will guard the other one a bit better. So, but the problem was that the Copenhagen register was placed not far from the German headquarters, the shell house, which later on was destroyed by your mosquitoes. And so it was really a problem, and it was also guarded by Danish guardsmen. So I had to form quite a force to do that. So that means that we had placed machine guns in the Ørsted Park just opposite to. And then in the early morning, we made it. And I have planned a diversion, so a teetro on the other part of Copenhagen was set afire with smoke and screaming people and all that. It was no fire at all, but just to have all the fire brigades to go there to try to fight the flames. So in fact, we knew that the fire brigade were not able to come to try to put out the fire we made in the National Register. So then we had some termite bombs and dough and such things, and we succeeded in destroying it. Not completely, but for a reasonably long time.
And this was near the shell house?
Yes, close to the shell house, yeah. It was within a kilometer, less than that, 500 meters or so. So we had to do it quick and come away quick, and we certainly did it. And we used cars. We stole the cars, and they were prepared for our stealing. You know, there was maybe the gate was closed with a link or something, and we just cut it. And inside was a car with petrol on and ready for driving, and the key in, But we had to steal it on account of the owner of the factory or the workshop might say, well, oh, we didn't know, and so on, so to be innocent. So we have also cars, and very often was from some communal authority, also town, electricity or some firm working for the town. So we all the time typing on so and so, just to hide it was a car we used with petrol. It was very, very difficult to get petrol.
What about your communications with London? How did you communicate?
By radio. I did not in my area, but upper in the headquarters have a radio communication. And then, we, of course, there was some officers coming to make the connection between the underground forces and SOE in London. So it functioned very well.
But you didn't have direct communication?
Yes, I could say I had to leave Copenhagen in beginning of February 45. My family I had to send my family to Sweden with one of my roots. My brother was taken by Germans and tortured they want to be to know where I was and so on. I, of course, no one knew, and therefore I was ordered in exile for a certain period. And exactly in that period, the Gestapo took most of the commanding leaders in Copenhagen. So I was very lucky. I escaped on account of I was ordered in exile in Odense. And in Odense, there was a link to England, the radio communication. And I just had to be there for a certain period and doing nothing. Absolutely doing nothing, and I started living in a hotel, and then I moved to some civilian, and I had, of course, a connection with intelligence people and the leaders in Odense, and they, every time they communicated to London, they had a last line saying, please bump the Hushmans school, and it was the Gestapo headquarters in Odense. So each time they had something to send to London, they ended all this off with, please bomb this headquarters. It did, but it was later on after I left. But when in February 45, it was a real disaster in Copenhagen on account of bad security from certain people and luck from the German side. They captured all the leaders in Copenhagen, but not me, on account of my stay in Odense.
Were you the only leader who was not captured?
Yeah. So, then...
About how many leaders did they get?
I would say that they took about 10 to 15, as the leader of the regions, and some from the leader in Copenhagen, leaders, but two or three of the Copenhagen leaders were not taken. I do not know why, but they escaped. And one of them was a so-called General Johansen. He was not a general, but he was a very good communist organizer and member of the leading council in Copenhagen. And in Odense, I got to know that I was to come back to Copenhagen to try to help him with reorganizing the whole thing. And of course I had to, but I was scared on account of the past, you know, family and all that. I was known, they had put a lot of money on my head, the Germans, on account I was had something to do with the liquidation of some famous leader of the Summer Corps. So
what was the Summer Corps?
It was what do you call it? Hitpolizei, also an under section of Gestapo on Danish side. Helped them, and they made a lot of terrible things, of sabotage and torture and killing and all that. So they were also in black uniforms and terrible people. And the leader, his name was Sommer. So it was not anything with the weather, but it was Sommer. And I was trying to kill him in August 44, I guess. But I had to go back to Copenhagen, and upon that time it was very difficult to travel in Denmark. So you had to come to cross the Great Belt, and they had an inspection area on both sides for the Germans, Gestapo, and all that. It was looking to each passenger passing from the train to the ferry. And I had, of course, my Colt with me. Also the pill. then, you know, you had to go into such a small area, and you have these people to look upon you. I was very scared, but I said something in German, I guess. Okay, then on board the ferry, it was better. But then you come to Sealand, and then you have to pass again a certain inspecting team, and well, it's I succeed you. So then I had the train to Copenhagen, but you never go on the train in the main radio station. You had to take one of the smaller ones for the. On the main, they always have a lot of people to look, so I had to go off, I guess, in Roskilde or some other place, and then come to Copenhagen, then try to contact some of my old leaders on the lower level, and then you have to try to get more and more in contact and to try to reorganize. And then I had to try to do something with two other regions where I became, well, I earlier had become in charge of the Frederiksberg region, and then I had some contacts there. So after a certain period, he was able to get reorganized.